We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us. We've got a good show today. We're going to open with a segment called A World of Good. And I thought I might create this little segment where we'll be sharing stories that are good news from around the world. Bread for the Journey's vision in the world is to nurture the seed of generosity in every human heart. And I read a quote the other day by Clarissa Pinkola Estes. You may remember her. She's the author who became well known after writing the book Women Who Run with Wolves. And in this quote, she said, "It is not given to us to know which acts or by whom will cause the critical mass to tip toward an enduring good. What's needed for dramatic change is an accumulation of acts, adding to, adding more, continuing." And so we at Bread for the Journey are doing our part to help cause the critical mass to tip toward an enduring good. And also today I'm going to be interviewing Austin artist Jean-Pierre Verdijo, who leads the Young Artists in Service Project at the Amala Foundation. As a child, Jean-Pierre and his mother navigated a life of homelessness. His mother is mentally ill. Doing art was the thing that saved his life, and now helping others through art is what is giving his life and the life of those he touches meaning. You're going to love this guy. He's great. Let's begin with A World of Good, and my first story actually comes from the pages of the San Francisco Chronicle on September 17th. On page 5, I just read this tiny little story about in 2010, the number of violent crimes in the United States fell by a surprising 12%. They said this is a far bigger drop than the nation has been averaging since 2001. And in another publication, Reuters News reported that in New York City, the murder rate for the first half of 2011, when compared to the same period last year, declined 8.8%. And if you compare the murder rate in New York City to 10 years ago, it's down 22.5%. And the article said no one knows why. The expectation was that with the weak economy and higher unemployment, crime would increase. And I'm wondering if you have an idea of what you think the reason is. If you do, write to me at bfjradio@gmail.com. And just as an afterthought, in my world, this would be front page news on every newspaper. A topic for journalists and opinion writers to ponder and investigate and write about. A hot news story that television media would be all over. It is, in my world, a statistic that has the potential, anyway, to lift us. Why do you think the crime rate is down? And did you hear the story about the school superintendent in Fresno County who's chosen to forfeit $800,000 in compensation he would have gotten over the next 3 years. His name is Larry Powell, and he's 63 years old. He was quoted as saying, "How much do we need to keep accumulating? There's no reason for me to keep stockpiling money." He started his career as a high school civics teacher, went on to make anti-bullying one of his pet projects, and part of his motivation is to make sure his projects survive California budget cuts and continue on long after he's gone. But another pressing motivation was that he wanted to restore people's faith in the government. He was upset when he learned about a few corrupt Southern California city officials who secretly boosted their salaries by hundreds of thousands of dollars. He said, "It's hard to believe that someone in the public trust would do that to the public. My wife and I asked ourselves, what can we do that might restore confidence in government?" Well, these days we hear a lot of stories about corruption in government. Whenever I hear stories about people who, through their actions, are telling the story of ethics in government, I want to spread the word. So hats off to you, Larry and Dot Powell. You are my World of Good action heroes for today. And my third story is about the resiliency of the human spirit. And I think it's critical that we make as a priority the telling of stories that reflect the better parts of our nature. We need accurate reflections in the media of who we really are, not just lopsided likenesses of the worst parts of our human nature. So this story begins with words from a young Korean man on the television show Korea's Got Talent. Did you know Korea had a version of America's Got Talent? They have Korea's Got Talent. I laughed when I saw this. He humbly said, "I don't sing that well, but when I sing, I feel like I become a different person." In the video, the judge asks him what he does for a living, and he says he's a manual laborer. You can see she's a little uncomfortable, and so then she changes the subject and asks, "When I look at your application, I see that you left the family section blank." And there's a moment or two of silence before he says, "I was left in the orphanage when I was 3. And when I was 5, I ran away after having gotten beaten by the people there. For 10 years, I sold gums and energy drinks on the street. I was alone." The judge clarifies what she thought she heard him say. "So you've lived by yourself since you were 5 years old?" And when he simply answers yes, you see the truth of that begin to sink in among all 3 judges. And then they invite him to perform. His name is Choi Sung-bong, and I'm not going to share anything more. I want you to see the film, other than to say that if you don't want to cry, don't watch the video. Oh, and one more thing. The act of spontaneous generosity on the part of the judges was a bonus I didn't expect. You can find this video on karmatube.org, that's karmatube.org, and the title is Homeless Kid Wows Korea. And I thought this was a perfect lead into my interview with Jean-Pierre Verdijo, because he too lived a life of homelessness as a child, and his creativity is what gave his life meaning. His story is his own, and we'll be having a conversation with him when we come back after the break. Pardon me for a moment. Jean-Pierre leads the Young Artists in Service Project at the Amala Foundation in Austin, Texas. He has a team of teen artists who teach art to vulnerable children at local farmers markets in the blue-collar part of town, and they create also murals of hope for homeless shelters and other under-arted spaces, as he likes to call them. As a child, Jean-Pierre often found himself sitting in dismal human service buildings that lacked art and expression, and art became his refuge. And today, in addition to his work at the Amala Foundation, he's getting his degree in art therapy so he too can help young people by nurturing their creative impulse. I believe we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, we'll speak with Jean-Pierre Verdijo. Please stay with us.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Explore the power and beauty in yourself and in others. Tune in to The Stacey Stern Show, Enriching You. Every week, Stacey Stern will connect you with men and women who are living and working from a place of passion. Stacey's guests include successful authors, filmmakers, actors, experts, and leaders. You'll hear what inspires each of them, and you'll be turned on to great films, books, and new media. Tune in to The Stacey Stern Show, Enriching You, Tuesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
There are a number of health and social services available to individuals for low cost or no cost. Now there's a radio program devoted to bringing you the information you need. Tune in to Outreach Today with host Melissa Jenkins-Simon. Our program promotes the benefits and services of CI Incorporated, providing health and social services over a wide spectrum of resources and agencies. We want to help you. Tune in to Outreach Today, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Step into the doorway to conscious choice, greater health, and well-being. Attain the balance that you've been seeking. Tune in and turn on 1111 Talk Radio. Feed the mind. Embrace positively. Release the tension. Step out of fear. Host Simran Singh will help you broaden your mind and open your heart toward a greater understanding of how to take charge of your life. 1111 Talk Radio is here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on Seventh Wave Network. 1111 Talk Radio, because shift happens.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet Talk Radio, VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
We're back, and we're talking to Jean-Pierre Verdijo in this segment. Jean-Pierre is an artist, a painter, living in Austin, Texas, and working with young people, teaching art to teenagers. And with his posse of teen artists, doing art with kids of all ages at the local farmers market, and always awake to the way in which art opens people up to the inner life, the thoughts, feelings, and memories that lie beneath the surface. Welcome, Jean-Pierre. Glad you're here. Thank you. Jean-Pierre, you were kind of a tot yourself when art came into your life. Can you tell us how old you were, earliest memories about doing art, and a little bit about your early life experience?
Yeah, my very first memories of school were at the easel. I remember I was in Miss Kellogg's class in PS 89 in Manhattan, and just being set there with the smock on and these primary colors in front of me, and just being allowed to just go for it. And it brought me so much joy. I remember creating many, many, many pieces. And I remember at some points, I just wanted to draw. If not painting, I just wanted to draw. And some of the other teachers would, you know, assistants would want to pull me away sometimes, and I remember my teacher saying, you know, just let him draw. And I remember I drew for what seemed like a few days, and then one day I got up and I was just ready to play with blocks and join the children in the other transitions. But those are my first memories of working things out with expression.
Mm-hmm. And as I said in some of the earlier introductions, there's a time in your life when you were raised by a single mom, and there were times in your life when you were without a home. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? Yeah. Well, my mother was mentally ill, and she was unable to form relationships around any intimacy and whatnot, and it caused her to have a lot of friction in the workplace, and we ended up being homeless and moving from city to city. We lived in Toronto, Chicago, Houston, and Miami between the ages of 10 and 14. And in each one of those cities, we would live in sometimes, some or most or even all of the homeless shelters in the entire city, which is the case in Chicago. And so I was in and out of a lot of schools, in and out of a lot of homes, and in between homes, homeless shelters. And it was in a lot of government agencies, just sitting there sometimes for hours on end, just waiting for them to come up with a solution to where we were going to go next. And it was frightening. It was boring. And we had all our possessions around us, which was just a few bags. And one thing that I had access to, I didn't have many toys, but one thing that I had access to is whenever I would be sent to a school, I would get a couple of pencils and a pad of paper, and I learned to carry those along with me, and I would just draw and go into a world that responded to some of the needs that I was having. And looking back, after studying art therapy in my later life, I look back at the drawings that I was doing, and I was drawing fortresses, and I was drawing like these castles, and I was drawing armored cars, and it was really interesting that I was feeling so vulnerable that my focus was going to how to to be completely unvulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was seeking, and that's what that's what was being expressed.
Yeah, these are the ways in which we find ways to cope. We have such strong spirits within us, resiliency spirits, and this sounds to me like this is what you were doing to cope and survive in a very difficult situation. Did you have any siblings in your life?
Not.
Was it just you and your mom?
It was just me and my mom. Yeah. Later, when I was 20, I hitchhiked to my dad's door, found him through private investigator, hitchhiked to his door, and found out that I had brothers, some half-brothers and sisters through him that I've recently connected back up with through the internet. Mm-hmm. But he has been, he came to New York City as a poor Puerto Rican boy, and he was, stealing cars and transporting stolen cars and drugs, and he's had a life of crime, and he's still at it. He was on the streets by the time he was 10 years old, alone, and that's a bridge that's never been able to really been mm-hmm. built between us. So I just bless him, wherever he is.
In some of the earlier conversations we had, and in your bio, you talked about this sort of journey that you had of actively working on love over fear. And I can imagine, living the kind of childhood that you had. Your mother was paranoid schizophrenic. That's correct?
Yes, that's true.
And so I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about this. I mean, your life could have turned out all kinds of ways if you had continued to give in to that fear. And I think I know it's a lot of work to stop when we're moving into a patterned way of being and make a shift. It involves beginning to trust people again and really, as in your words, choosing love over fear. Can you maybe share a story about your life? A particular story that might illustrate that, and even talk about it in a general sense. I'd love to hear more about that.
Sure, Sure. Well, I'll go at it at a general sense, and perhaps something might shine through. The way that I was raised, you know, there was, my mother was Jehovah's Witness, and there's some, you know, definite Bible teachings and whatnot. And there was this concept of that God is love, and God is all powerful, and God is this loving father figure. And it really would stoke me up, you know, and I'd feel that. And in life, then there was this call to respond to life, you know, that I would see people respond in a way of fear, and you know, you ought to be afraid, and this could happen, and I watched my mom be so afraid and sabotage so much of her life for not having the faith that she so much, you know, preached, you know, really. And in watching that, it just really made this strong impression on me of like, wow, like it's one thing to think something, but it's another thing to believe it, adapt it, and to live by it. And I swore that I would live the love that I imagined was present in the world and that I felt in me. And I would, you know, it was just everywhere. I would just look at the clouds. I would look at the ocean when I moved to Miami Beach. I had this deep appreciation for living, and I just wanted to always be with that, and not. I was sensed it as I was growing up. You know, my friends, they became 16, 17, and some got cars, and then 21, and people started going to bars and drinking, and I was just like, you know, wait a second. Let's preserve this this something precious about our youthful spirit that we have. Like, I just saw so many of them just cash out for the mundane and for like the simple pleasures, and I felt like stopped appreciating, you know, spending the night at houses and frolicking in the parks and so I've kind of made a life of that through my expression through art.
So you had a journey around, today what you're doing is you've gone back to school and you're getting your master's degree in art therapy, but there is a long journey that took you from there to here, much of it involving art, psychology. Can you say a little bit about that journey?
For sure. You know, in my frolickings, you know, I lived so much and discovered so many things, and eventually, you know, was brought to the world of relationships and was, you know, struggling with intimacy as I, you know, my role model for relationships was my mother, and really, really struggling in those relationships. And it was after, me and one particular girlfriend split up that I sunk into depression and despair. And I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep. You know, all I could think about was her, and I was like, "Well, what is this? What is this that I'm feeling? Why do we feel this? Like, what is the nature of this suffering?" And that question really got me going, and it got me back into school. It got me into yoga studios. It got me to go to India. It got me into group therapy. It got me into so much investigation of what is the nature of this life and of this suffering. And in that study, I came upon children's studies. You know, I was studying psychology and they talked so much about children. So I started going to attending these children's studies classes and deciding that, wow, this is great. I wanna work with children. I want to make a positive difference in children's lives, because this is the root, and if I can affect children's lives, then I'm affecting a whole generation of humans, like, onward. And so that seemed to be the path for me. And when I started doing that, you know, I just really got hooked. I just started reading more and more, and I could feel, I felt a connection with them. And I wanted to touch their lives deeply, and I wasn't sure how, because in this way that I wasn't the director of some of the centers that I worked in, and sometimes talking about the emotions, like a kid will just, you know, the kid is bullying another kid, and you'll be like, hey, what's going on? I see you're bullying this kid, and I don't know what it is about me or about our connection or what, but the kid is all of a sudden is like, you know, well, you know, my mom bullies me at home. Like, the kid would start opening up to me, and we would start having this emotional process, like, you know, wow, well, I hear that, and, you know, what can I do? And, you know, and the kid's like, don't tell my mom, or this or that. And, you know, so all of a sudden, I'm having this emotional process with the kid, and some of the directors that I worked with were like, hey, we can't, you know, we can't even deal with this. We can't deal with the spirit of the child. We're here to be a good YMCA or a good Montessori school or a good whatever program this is, and you know, that's not your role. And it was really difficult for me to accept that.
I'm gonna interrupt you for a second, Jean-Pierre, because we're going to have to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about your continuing work with kids, the Young Artists in Service Project at the Amala Foundation, and the work that you're doing today.
Awesome.
We'll be right back. Thank you.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Tune in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Voice America Variety Channel. It's practical, positive solutions for a happy, empowered, and successful life.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Who or what fills you up? How do you talk to yourself about yourself? Do you feel like your life isn't where you want it to be, that you are underappreciated, or that your relationships leave you wanting? Tune in every week as Dr. Debbie gives you something to think about, a reality check that will allow you to take charge of what goes on in your life. Your life is happening now. Don't waste another minute. Tune in Mondays at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel and listen to It's About You with Dr. Debbie.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back. And we're talking to Jean-Pierre Verdejo about his life as an artist, his work with young people in art, and the Amala Foundation. So I'm struck by this title, Young Artists in Service at the Amala Foundation. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do and why artists in service?
So what we do is the Young Artists in Service program was started in response to teenagers in the Amala community who had attended the Global Youth Peace Summit and had followed up in what's called the One Village Project. They've attended this summit. They've gathered with other peace leaders, youth peace leaders from around the world, oftentimes refugees who have experienced extraordinary situations, horrific situations sometimes, at a very young age. And these youth are exceptional. They've experienced life in such a way that has awakened them to the intensity and the reality. They have no pretenses about what is happening in the world. And so they are passionate about leading for peace. They want it, and they want it so bad. And they start with themselves, but oftentimes they're stoked up. They're so stoked up that they want to just move and to move and shake. And I was inspired by these youth. Art had become the path that I worked with youth in these different programs. It was a way that I was able to cut through the bureaucratic red tape and start to work with the spirits of youth.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was being a part of these programs, it was amazing, because suddenly I was working with the Amala Foundation. That it was like, go for it, Jean-Pierre. Like, you want to talk emotions and you want to touch the spirits of these children and talk about the hard topics. That's great. That's exactly what we're here for. We're here to listen. And it my whole body smiled and I went for it. And it felt so good that I was like, there's got to be a way that we can bring the Global Youth Summit and the One Village Project, like every day. I want to start a school. I was like, we need to have a Amala Foundation school. And this has been my dream for a long time. And it hasn't happened. But what has happened is that I've been able to start a weekly program where we go out to the homeless, where we go to the farmers market and we provide an open studio at the farmers market for the youth there. And it's on the east side, and it's such a simple and beautiful thing to bring art into this space, because there's families and they're just walking around, they're just picking up their groceries, and suddenly they wander in, and tots sometimes will just start working and creating art we offer them. And it's really not me, it's really a team of inspired teenagers, and that my job is just to coordinate this opportunity for them to come into the community and serve. And so these teenagers are with the youth, and they're guiding, and the parents are watching this, and artists that are nursing their coffee, that are just strolling around the market, come in and they see this and they get inspired. The parents are getting inspired, the parents are sharing, sitting down and suddenly having connections with other parents or with the youth leaders or with myself. It becomes this thing, this function that reminds me of church. It reminds me of church in the way that it's community coming together and not to buy anything. And I feel like that is one of the most important experiences to have, like at least once a week, is to come together with others to not buy anything. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautiful. And so that's something that we've been doing, and that program was born from the homeless shelter that we painted some murals. The backstory of that is I was approached by the homeless shelter to paint murals to beautify their space. They knew that I was an artist and that I painted murals and that I might be interested. And they had no money to offer me, and of course I said yes. And it stayed on my back shelf for so long. For years it stayed on my back shelf because I never had the time to dedicate to it. And I moved and I put the pin on and moved the pin board. And one day I ran to someone. I was like, I still want to do that project. And she was like, it's okay. Don't worry about it. It's all right. Like, she was like recognizing that I had a good feeling about it, but that I couldn't commit to it. And at that point I had been working with Alma for a while, and I was like, I really want to do this. What's the key? What do I need to do? And I realized, like, fundraising, through working with Amala, I learned about fundraising. And it was like, you need to fundraise so that you can take a week away from everything else you're doing in your life and the hustle and bustle and trying to make ends meet and have the money there so that you can do this work. And I was like, yeah. And so I did it. And in doing that, I realized, I was like, how great would this be to be a program, a project for the One Village to come in and paint some of these murals? I had met some extraordinary young people at the Global Youth Summit, Nani Zepeda, Bethany Reed, Raphael. Like, it was just these awesome youth. And I was like, you know, I invited them in and was like, hey, can we, would you like to do this? And they were like, instantly, bam, like, I would love to do this. And so we went in, we painted the murals, and in the driving, you know, every day and all the thinking, Nani came to me one day as we're driving. She's like, you know, I'd like to come to the homeless shelter once a month and continue making art with these youth. And I was like, that's great. That's, you know, that's inspired. That's so wonderful. So then I go home, I'm taking my bath, you know, I do my best thinking in the bath, and I'm struck with like, well, what if I could fundraise and make it so that we could pay her to go every week, you know? And the next day, you know, we're driving, I pick her up and we're driving there, and I handed that idea over to her, and she's thinking about it, and she's like, I would love to. And it was there. Boom. That's what it was. That was the moment where it was like, yeah, like, this feels great. We want to do this all the time. Let's make a program out of this. So I went to the people at the Alma Foundation and explained to them our desire and that I want to pay this young woman to, you know, to do this, that this is the only way that really she can commit every weekend. And they're like, you know, that's great, but you got to find the money. And the money that I found was Bread for the Journey, a grant through Bread for the Journey.
We're glad to have been able to help. Tell me a little bit about Nani and her story. How did she come to you? What has transpired in her life as a result of doing this work?
Yeah. Well, Nani is one of those beings that is just so naturally beautiful in her presence. In just the way that she stands and does everything, that people just become relaxed and reverent. She pauses, she looks at you. She's just amazing. And when she first came to the summit 3 years ago, she was fresh from Guatemala. She was a refugee, fresh from extreme violent conditions, and she barely knew any English, and she spent most of the summit crying. And I really didn't have much contact with her that first year. And the second year, you know, she was moving. You know, you could see that she had picked up some English and she had adjusted to America somewhat. But then she, in that second year, she shared her journal with me, and I was awestruck. I couldn't believe the level of work that she had done, and it was all collage. And instantly, I was like, wow, this is great. And it was during that next year that we started the program, and we painted these murals. So we get to the murals, we get there, and we're like priming and we're taping and whatnot, and then we start painting. And in that moment, I realized, like, I was like, you know, I'm showing her how to paint some stuff. And then she was like, Jean-Pierre, I've never painted before. She had never touched a paintbrush in her life. And I was like, it shook me inside because it was so pure, and her art was so raw and really so developed. Like, she, what she had access to was tape and scissors and glue and paper. And she took that medium to a level that just shined, and then she was, you know, with a paintbrush in her hand and trembling. And you know what? It was rad. We painted some beautiful murals, and on the other side of that, we had this other young artist in service named Bethany, who has attended the Waldorf School, the Austin Waldorf School, from a very young age, and has had all the privilege in the world, and she's, you know, has all this skill, and she's like rocking out all this painting, And then, but then she doesn't, you know, like the social skills with the youth in the shelter. It was just a whole nother thing, and feeling the sense of guilt that she has and isolation and living, you know, in Oak Hill and in this very different life. You know, she's struggling with her things, and Nani's struggling with her things, and we're all struggling with, you know, we all have a common suffering. And then here we all are doing this work in the world, in service, and just feeling so good and so blessed. And to watch them together blossom into sisters, I mean, through the summits.
Beautiful, beautiful. So you, through art, these two girls from very different worlds found their connection. And we're going to talk maybe a little bit more about them and continue this conversation after our break. So for our listeners, if you've just joined us, feel free, if you have any questions for Jean-Pierre, to send them to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And we'll be right back with Jean-Pierre and continue this conversation. Thank you for staying with us.
Experts. Call toll free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You were born a visionary. How do you get closer to your personal vision? Tune in to Visionary Radio with Giselle. Our program is all about evidence-based positive change. Giselle and her guests will bring you stories of positive visions achieved, hope and renewal, designed to inspire you in ways that matter in your life, in ways that last and bring you closer to who and where you want to be. This program is for and about real people, and we want you to be a part of it too. Tune in to Visionary Radio with Giselle every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. Drawing on resources from wellness communities throughout America and abroad, the show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Wellness Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Good morning, and thank you for staying with the show. I appreciate it. And we're here with Jean-Pierre Verdijo talking about his life as an artist and his work with young people in developing them as artists and touching their inner life through their creative impulse. And he's been telling us a story about a young girl named Nani from Guatemala, from war-torn village in Guatemala, and a young girl of privilege named Bethany. And the two of them forged an uncommon friendship. And maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that and how these two came together through the Artists in Service project.
Well, truly they came together through the Global Youth Peace Summit, which is, you know, which is the bigger framework, and which, you know, is the mother tree that the Young Artists in Service Apple dropped from. But I believe that through the service of the Young Artists in Service program, they really got to spend more time together and it just got more intimate. And that's the nature of artwork, that, you know, if you want to hear someone's story, you know, all you got to do is slide them a piece of paper and put some crayons on the table and sit down with the willingness to hear that story and just start scribbling yourself. And, you know, you're about to catch an earful. And, mm-hmm. and that, I don't know what it is about artwork exactly. I'm sure there's some, you know, some scientists or, you know, philosophers that could, you know, get into, you know, what it does exactly. But what I know is that it works, is that when you start to pull from your psyche, from your inside, and start, you know, to connect your mind with your hand and your heart and start to, you know, get that movement going, that a release comes and connection and the availability for connection, for true intimate connection, happens. And that's what I want to see. I believe that the healing that happens within that is key to spreading peace on earth. So that's the work that I do, because I feel like that's the piece of peace that comes to me naturally.
I understand. I'm touched. I'm moved by the way that art brings people together, and I'm noting also that you talked about. I like the Amala Foundation. I had a lovely time scrolling around on their website, and you had talked to me earlier about the Global Youth Peace Summit that was the thing that sort of brought everybody together. It opened your eyes to the ability to be able to work with the Amala Foundation, and you found what it sounds to me like your real home. Your professional home, and maybe even your spiritual home. And the same is true for Nani and for Bethany. Tell us a little bit about this Global Youth Peace Summit and what it's about.
Yeah. The Global Youth Peace Summit is, without a doubt, the most powerful experience that I've had in my life. I've done it 5 times now, and, you know, I've been there all 5 years. And my role has shifted, you know, from just an observer to a cook to an artist to a counselor. And last year I was there as a counselor. It was so wonderful to step away from the art and to, you know, to hand the art over to these youth leaders, Nani and Bethany. You know, they're now, you know, they've graduated from the Global Youth Summit. They're 19. And they're youth leaders now. Now they're coming back to the summit as ones that have done it a few times and that are in service to the younger youth that are starting the program.
And how long is it? Is it a week-long program, did you say?
It's a week-long summer camp. And they, sleepover summer camp. And they were able to head the Young Artists in Service, they were able to head the art programs for the camp for the week. And
oh, lovely.
It was amazing. It was like, wow. So I was able to step back and become a counselor. But what happens there is you have youth, refugee youth from all over the world. Austin, Texas is one of the largest cities for refugee relocation. I heard a figure like 45,000 refugee families. I don't know what year that was. It was probably a few years ago, living here in Austin. And so we have youth there from the Congo, from Uganda, from Burma, from Bhutan, from the gang wars in Mexico, you name the conflict, and we have the youth there. And some of them are fresh from these conflicts, you know, have only been in the United States for a few weeks sometimes. Oftentimes language is an issue. We have interpreters. But we have international languages. We have soccer. We have art making. We have dance. We have tears. I mean, it's amazing to see these youth form a village, what we call this one village, in such a short time. Sometimes the very first night, I mean, it makes me shiver. And the adult group, the healing that happens, you know, we're there as volunteers. But the healing that happens through holding space and acceptance for such a strong process and a willing to listen to them and travel into the depths of their pain and to the heights of their joy with them simply opens us up in whatever places that was shut down in us at whatever point.
So, oh, that's such a beautiful, beautiful explanation of what I think happens at the Youth Summit. And, you know, I'm just struck, I want to say a couple of things as we're heading towards a closing here. I'm just struck about the idea that, you know, there are so many stories of people who have had a hard life and whose life has become harder because of that. And there are just as many stories, and maybe more, not the ones that we don't hear in the evening news, about people like you and about people like Nani and Bethany and many of the young people who had an opportunity to be at the Youth Summit, whose lives are turned around, who have chosen or have had the ability somehow to take that sorrow and have it open their heart instead of break their heart apart. And I want to, as we're coming to a close here, really commend you, Jean-Pierre, for choosing love over fear and for using your God-given talent as an artist to serve other people. I was touched by it in the conversations we have, and I continue to be touched by it now. And I want to thank you so much and in a secondhand way, thank Nani and Bethany, too, for the work that they've done. And I want to invite people to join us next Saturday as well when I interview Alison Bonds Shapiro. This is an incredible story. At 55 years old, Alison suffered two devastating brainstem strokes. She was profoundly disabled, and today, if you met Alison, you would have no idea. She is fully healed. And she's going to be talking about the brain's astonishing ability to remake itself, even in the aftermath of great damage. And during her recovery, she learned that the way in which we engage the challenges of our lives profoundly changes the outcome of those challenges. And so I hope you'll join us. It's going to be an interesting conversation. And finally, if you'd like to support the work of Bread for the Journey, we hope you'll go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. Thank you so much. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free. Join us next week. Bye-bye.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.